welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with members of the Roller Girls about their skate of emergency. We'll get a preview of Wednesday's Pillars of America talk with guest Roger Crawford. Lindsay Halvick will be here to discuss upcoming summer orca adaptive recreation activities and events. We'll hear about the Empty Bowls Glory Hole fundraiser with event coordinator Andrea Campbell. And Brenda Taylor will give us an update on the Juno Douglas High School Site Council. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A special election is being held on the Navajo Nation. Polls are open for voters to choose a president, board of election supervisors, and other vacancies. Primaries were held in August 2014, but the November election was delayed after a candidate's Navajo language fluency was challenged and he was later disqualified. Since then, election issues have worked their way through tribal government and court. The presidential election is bittersweet for some.
Our rights have been violated time and time again.
That's Becky Nave Kling, a member of a grassroots group working to get their voices heard by tribal and judicial leaders. The organization, the Navajo Voters' Rights Coalition, formed after the primaries.
It's bittersweet because, yes, the people want to vote for their president. Yes, we want an election. We're not getting a fair election. But then it's really bitter because it's not going to be a president of the people's choice.
Nave Kling says that's the message they're hearing from many people who voted in the primaries. They feel disrespected and say their voice was not heard and don't plan to vote today. But the coalition is encouraging people to head to the polls because their vote can still send a message. Here's why she's voting.
And yes, I am voting. I have no confidence in either presidential selection, so I am going to go vote for my board of election supervisor, and I am going to vote for a school board if there's a school board option on there.
And she says the coalition's work is not finished even after the special presidential election.
We the people have the final voice, and we are not done talking. We're talking, but they're not listening, too. That makes a difference. The people will not rest.
The coalition has 5 chapters on the reservation to help inform voters of their rights. Candidates Joe Shirley Jr., a former Navajo Nation president, and Russell Begay are vying for the top post. In southwest Alaska, the recent Chamay Festival packed the Bethel High School gym for a weekend of dancing, singing, and celebrating life in the Waikei Delta. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
The Tuksuk Bay Nelson Island dancers include performers from fourth grade through high school. Senior Deanna Jimmy says dance is a way to keep their culture vibrant.
It's really important to keep our culture going, so we try to speak to them in Yupik, encourage them to talk in Yupik.
The festival honored dancer, educator, and advocate Chuna McIntyre with the Living Legend Award. He's the founder of the Nunamta Dancers.
Dancing is like breathing. You do it because it's part of you. Keeps you going, keeps you alive.
Tuksuk Bay teenager Byron Nikolai's 15,000 Facebook fans would not fit into the Bethel gym, but it was clear that he had a lot of real life likes. For some performers, dancing is a way to come home. Sylvester Ayik of the King Island Dancers was born and raised on the island.
It bonds the unity among the King Island community, even if they were not in King Island anymore. And song and dance, you know, help to keep us as one.
In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and in the studio with me are members of the Juneau Roller Girls, also Fairbanks Roller Girls. We'll get there in a minute. There's more to that. Latter-day Shank, In Your Face and Nomad, welcome to the studio.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Good to have you. And my roller derby name is not Scott Burton, but Got Hurtin.
Got Hurtin. Love it.
Got Hurtin, your host here. A lot of stuff going on right now, Latter-day Shank. Tell us about it.
Okay, so as many in the community may know, the Juneau Roller Girls have recently declared a state of emergency, and this is specific to our need to raise $20,000 so we can purchase a sport court so we can keep skating at Centennial Hall, and NFACE has the details on that, and I have details on the events that we're doing around town to raise those funds as well as take online donations.
Cool. Let's save the details for a minute. Why do we need a sport court at Centennial Hall?
Well, Centennial Hall has so graciously agreed to help us fund this sport court. It's a portable skating surface that will allow us to skate and not damage their beautiful floor.
Got it, because there's been a little bit of damage from the skating so far.
Well, we skate hard.
I know you do.
Go big or go home.
I'm hoping that the sport court is a little softer because people hit the ground pretty hard, too.
Oh, it is. It has a little bit of bounce, and you put it together like a puzzle piece.
Wow.
So we'll put it down for every game, and we'll take it up for every game. So there'll be some labor involved, but we have a lot of volunteers and people in the community that love derby.
Okay, Nomad, all the way from Fairbanks, tell us about your relationship with Roller Girls in Alaska.
Well, specifically with Juneau, I've come down and ref twice here for the Juneau Roller Girls, and I've got a lot of friends here with the league, including a couple that came out of Fairbanks originally who are now Juneau Roller Girls. We've got Titan Young and Poutine now skating for the Juneau Roller Girls out of Fairbanks. And we're actually down doing whatever we can to support. We're flying through on our way back from a co-ed versus co-ed game in Petersburg, where we had the wonderful Just Julie from Juneau Roller Girls come down and guest work with us there. She was my alternate pivot, working my other defensive lineup with me when we were out on the track. So it's been absolutely wonderful, and they've been great helping us get around town while we got stuck here on a mechanical failure, and we just wanted to come help. Also, we have to deal with the sport court issue in Fairbanks as well because we've got the ice down in most of our arenas during the winter. So we've gotten very familiar with the putting up and taking down the sport court. Great surface to work with, really phenomenal. Helps protect everything underneath it, and it's a great surface. It lasts for a lot of years and really does protect the surface underneath so that the rest of the community can get the use out of the space so that everyone has equal access.
Sure, sure. Nomad, you mentioned co-ed league. Tell us about this.
So a little over a year ago, the decision was made that, you know, we really needed to have some co-ed in the state, and so I went forward with a small group of individuals in Fairbanks and put together co-ed derby, the Frozen Chosen Co-ed up in Fairbanks. It's the first co-ed derby league in the state of Alaska. It was kind of a recreational practice thing, just letting the guys get some time on skates. Until January, there was a shortage from one team, and we ended up needing to have someone come in and help. So Frozen Chosen agreed, put together a roster in January, and played the Boomtown Derby Dames. It was the first co-ed game in the state of Alaska. That was January 3rd of this year. And then now, just this last Saturday in Petersburg, the second co-ed team in the state, the Devil's Club Co-ed Derby, put together another venue, and we went down and played the first co-ed team versus co-ed team game in the state of Alaska.
Very exciting. I mean, derby culture in Alaska is just blowing up right now, it seems like. Well, I mean, even down south, but especially here in Alaska. Is that true?
Well, actually, Prince of Wales is putting together a new league, and we know that last year the Sitka Slayers came out and had their first bout here competitively here with us in Juneau. I mean, Petersburg has a team, Denali Destroyers. I mean, it's there's a culture here that is alive and well and really supported by individuals here in Alaska.
And maybe all of you can contribute to this answer, but why? What is the appeal of roller derby? Why do so many people like it? Why is it working so well right now?
Well, I feel like it welcomes everybody. So it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what your interests are. It's just a lot of fun. And it's for everybody.
Very inclusive and accessible. Okay. Any other additions
to that?
Well,
in my professional life, I'm a professor at the university. So it's kind of like this alter ego. And I put a picture up recently on Facebook, and my friends are like, oh, you look so fierce and intimidating. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. When I fall down, I'm really intimidating.
This is Latter-day Shank speaking. Remind us what you teach at UAS.
I'm in the School of Management, and I'm a professor of business administration.
All right. Nomad?
Well, I can tell you, not only is it inclusive, but now we've got, last count I had was 17 leagues across the state between juniors, women's, and co-ed. And everybody's coming together in an incredible way to help each other. I can tell you that it helped me through one of the roughest parts in my life when I really needed something to focus on, and the athleticism and the energy I put into that helped me get through some very horrible things in my life. And I know I'm one of probably 100 or more in the state of Alaska who were in that same situation. Additionally, what I love about it, we just had the conversation this weekend, is it teaches so many people skills that they would never otherwise have. We look at the boards. Most of these leagues are run by boards of directors. And as a general rule, these are women who normally have no experience doing business. They're not involved in communities outside of their small, either their family, their church, their small circle of friends. And within a year or two, we've got women running businesses that are running, you know, upwards of $100,000 a year through a business. They've learned how to manage events, run and produce everything from simple board minutes all the way to proposals and legal torts, where we're attempting to make sure that everyone gets equal access. And what comes out of this is this great personal, physical, emotional, and responsible development of people. Young men, young women, older. I mean, we've got now with co-ed juniors going on, we've got young men that I was able to witness coming out of the Valley in Palmer, who, when you think of a 16 or a 17-year-old boy spending time with a bunch of 15 or 16-year-old girls, immediately you're thinking, well, this is trouble. And these two little gentlemen that were skating with him were absolute gentlemen. They were taking care of him, treating everybody from their league and the league they played against like they were sisters, watching out for him. It was absolutely incredible to watch. If nothing else, what we've done is moved a group of gentlemen who otherwise would have been trapped in kind of the norm of society and given them this great emphasis towards, for lack of a better term, the modern feminist movement, where they recognize that everyone is equal. Gender doesn't matter. Age doesn't matter, and they're just turning out some great human beings from this program. And this is our future in derby with these youngins. And you're seeing the same sort of change. I'm seeing men who otherwise maybe got involved in derby because, oh, yeah, women running around in fishnets and hot pants. And by the end of it, they're going, no, leave them alone. They're completely empowered. And I'm just here because I really enjoy and support the sport. And this is just, you know, little tiny segments of a broader movement that's happening because of it. So, I mean, it's not only inclusive on an individual level, but what it does for society just with the people it touches internally, let alone what it does through all the 501c3s that are helping other nonprofits, helping homeless shelters. We've done breast cancer awareness, prostate cancer awareness, animal shelters, homeless shelters, and this is just in the Fairbanks Roller Girls. These are just our recent set, the Farthest North Girl Scout chapter. These are all groups that we've helped, and I know Juno's helping a bunch, and there's all of these leagues, 17 statewide, who are helping all of their local charities and all of these people. And every month, every time we run a new tryout, we get five or six new people who are brand new and excited and think 6 months from now, they're bringing in more people. And it's really just a great movement towards advancing ourselves as people and as a society and understanding equality amongst all of the participants, as well as drawing in those spectators who otherwise were just there because, hey, it's girls knocking each other down on the track. 2 years later, they're reffing and they're going, you know, these are amazing women, and let me help support them and help them empower themselves.
All right. That's Nomad speaking right there. Wow. Sounds like a lot of positives involved with this sport. And to keep it going here in Juneau, we need a sport court.
We need a sport court by September. And so we're in the process of raising, as I mentioned, $20,000. We're about $3,500 so far. We have received a generous donation last week of $1,000. We were super pleased. We do have a website set up, JunoRollerGirls.com, and individuals can donate directly to the sport car by selecting that option. And we have received donations as far down as south as Texas, a couple hundred dollars from a man in Texas, and so the online donations are coming in. Each first Friday, you'll see us skating around town with empty extra tufts. We call that Fill the Boot. We'll be at the Alaskan Bar on May 1st for the next first Friday, so we're collecting funds that way. And then we also have a summer Sunday brunch series that's going to start this weekend. We'll be having a brunch at one of our sponsors, Rockwell. They are incredible supporters and are generously donating a portion of the proceeds for any sales between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. this Sunday, April 26th, directly to our sport court. And then there'll be a subsequent last Sunday brunch in May, June, July, August, and that's going to help build our funds as well. We've applied for some grants. We're looking for partnerships with different Alaskan companies, and we're being very creative in terms of where we can find funds, but we are looking to the community to contribute as well.
And real quick, we don't have a ton of time left, but I know that sport courts can be used by other community organizations. Can you give us a couple examples of who else might benefit from the use of the sport court?
Well, I know the Juno Jumpers are a big favorite here in Juno, and the sport court would be so beneficial for them.
Okay. And you, I know you guys know, Matt, you're looking for one up north. Can you think of other folks in your community that might be able to use one?
Well, we've had one for several years now. And we use it there in the Carlson Center to protect the floor when we go out to skate on when the ice is down. And with that, we've got other organizations that are working with us in Fairbanks that are able to use that and gain access to it. The Fairbanks Roller Girls is currently partnering with several other arts organizations, an Aerial Silks group that they're doing some subletting to. And then also that sport court allows access. We always do halftime shows where we allow other members of the community to come in and present, you know, their hobbies and activities that also help benefit the community. We just had WIO, the World Indian Eskimo Indian Olympics, come up and do a beautiful demonstration during our last halftime. We've had dance presentations, recitals, and all of that's made possible by having that sport court to protect that floor. If we don't have that venue, then we can't bring those other community organizations in to assist as well.
Latter-day Shank, you're going to add to that?
Oh, I just think that we need the sport court, and I just encourage people to get out, watch for the Derby Girls on skates, come to the brunch, and donate online if you have the means and capability to support Derby.
And that website once more is?
JunoRollerGirls.com.
All right, Latter-day Shank, in your face, and Nomad, thank you all for coming into the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya.
You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. Skating a buffalo herd, you can't roller skate in a buffalo herd, but you can be happy if you've mind to. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage, you can't take a shower in a parakeet cage, you can't take a shower in a parakeet cage, but you can be happy if you've mind to. All you got to do is put your mind to it, knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. Well, you can't go swimming in a baseball pool, you can't go swimming in a baseball pool, you can't baseball pool, but you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't change film with a kid on your back, you can't change film with a kid on your back, you can't change film with a kid on your back, but you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car, you can't drive around with a tiger in your car, you can't drive around with a tiger in your car, but you can be happy if you've a mind to. All you got to do is put your mind to it, knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. Well, you can't roller skate in the buffalo herd, you can't roller skate in the buffalo herd, you can't roller skate in the buffalo herd, be happy if you've a mind to. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch, you can't go fishing in a watermelon patch, you can't go fishing in a watermelon patch, but you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't roller skate in the buffalo herd, you can't roller skate in the buffalo herd.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. Earlier in the day, Mr. Jeff Brown had a chance to catch up with Wednesday's Pillars of America guest speaker, Roger Crawford. Here's that interview now.
I'm in the studio with Mandy Massey and Roger Crawford. Roger's talking tomorrow at the Centennial Hall presentation put on by Glitch Valley Rotary. Andy and Roger, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you so much.
You.
Wonderful to be here.
So, Roger, you're a champion tennis player, and there's something else that makes it your accomplishments more unique. You had a severe birth defect, which affected all four limbs.
Right, right. I was born with a physical challenge, affects all four of my limbs. For the people listening, the best way to describe it is it's from the elbows down and from the knees down. I have two fingers on my left hand and one finger on my right hand. I have an artificial left leg below the knee, and I have three toes on my right foot. But I found tennis because moved from Cleveland, Ohio to California, and this beautiful weather that we have there, and there was tennis courts across the street from my home, and I just started hitting tennis balls against a backboard, and tennis really just became my passion. And once I learned how to hold on to the racket with two hands and secure the racket, then I found I could have some success playing tennis. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me. I played in high school, and then I played in college at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles.
Tell me about your challenge and how it affects everything you do.
Well, you know, no question. I mean, having hands like mine and legs like mine, you have to adjust and adapt. And I think for me, growing up, I learned that everybody has challenges. They just come in different forms, emotional, attitudinal. Some you can see and some you can't. So I learned to focus in on what I could do, my ability, if you will, instead of a disability. And also, for me, understanding that everybody has challenges, I didn't feel different. I just thought, you know, my challenges are evident and out front and I can see them, but everybody's going to be challenged in some way.
What's the name of the medical condition?
It's called ectrodactyly. And which is a big word that basically says that it affects your lower legs and lower arms.
How common is it?
About 1 in 90,000 people have it. It is genetic. They found the area and with the Geno Project. They found the area that is affected. But I have my wife and I have four children, but our only biological child is my daughter Alex, and she did not inherit it. It's usually a 50-50 chance. But I have to tell you that if somebody offered me surgery today to change my hands and my legs, the truth is I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I mean, there's surgery I could have now that could certainly dramatically change the look of my hands and my legs, and I wouldn't do it because I would tell you that there's been many more opportunities from it than obstacles, many more joys than sorrows. I mean, just the opportunity to be here in Juneau, for example, and I think about being part of this Pillars of America lecture series, which I have to tell you I think is awesome. Very few communities do this, and you've brought in some amazing speakers, and the fact that I'm included in that group is a tremendous honor. But to be able to have the opportunity to share a little of my story, hopefully offer some inspiration and some insight to the audience, I mean, what an amazing opportunity that is.
You've written several books. They've been translated into 17 languages, making it a really worldwide text.
Right. I wrote a book called How High Can You Bounce, which is one that has been fairly well received around the world. I say to people that How High Can You Bounce, people seem to like the book, except when I spoke at the National Skydiving Association. I guess bounce made skydivers a little uneasy. But it has been, to me, incredibly gratifying that I've received letters from really throughout the world of people that have read a book that I've written and felt that it offered them something of value. And that again, is something that, you know, fuels my motivation, wants me to continue to do what I can do. And I'm not saying just offering inspiration to people that are physically challenged. The one thing I want to make sure people understand is that if hopefully they come to my presentation, is that it really has very little to do with physical challenges. It has to do with challenges oftentimes that are self-imposed. Our attitude, vision, motivation, all those types of things that we can control.
Tell me about the ICANN attitude.
So an ICANN attitude, to me, that means that saying I can are two powerful words. Here's why. You very rarely, if ever, perform better than you believe you can. So if you are looking at something in your life and you see that as impossible, you'll look for evidence from your life to support that pessimistic attitude. In the same respect, if you believe, yes, I can, then you'll look for evidence that will support that optimistic view. Simply put, the better that you choose to think, the better results you get. Now, an I can attitude doesn't change reality. It is what it is. However, our attitude determines how we see what is.
Tennis hasn't been the only sport you've excelled in.
Right. I played in high school. I played tennis and also played football. And I'll be telling this story in my presentation, but I had a very unique experience playing football. I had recovered a fumble in high school and I picked it up and was running for the end zone, and a gentleman on the other team grabbed hold of my left leg and pulled it off. So I hopped for a touchdown, which was pretty remarkable. In fact, that story was in the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book. And so I'll tell that story tomorrow, because that's a unique experience that not too many people have, having a player come apart right on the field.
Was there a time when you had the aha moment that you discovered that you had a gift for inspiring people?
The first time that I gave a presentation was to a high school in Los Angeles, and it was a group of about 1,500 students, inner city high school, pretty rough environment. And afterwards, I had a couple of the students come up to me and say, you know, your message really, really made a difference. It made me laugh. It made me look at my life differently and gave me some ideas on how I might be able to become the best me that I can. And from that moment, I thought, boy, this is a great opportunity and one that I'm not going to take for granted. I'm going to make sure that every audience that I speak to, I give them everything that I have. But it's not about me. It's really about them. When audiences hear me speak, after a couple of minutes, they really forget about my hands and about my legs. They really do. And then they start to think about the message and how it applies in their life. And that's really what I want, because it's not about me.
I'm talking with Roger Crawford. This could be talking Pillars of America presentation on Wednesday, Centennial Hall, put on by the Glacier Valley Rotary. Randy Massey, can you give some more of the details, please?
You can get your tickets today at Hearthside Books at either location, and feel free to come to the door if you didn't get your tickets ahead of time and grab those. But make sure to come early, 10:45, 11, that's not too early, and doors open at 11:15. Tickets are $35. It includes a fabulous lunch by the Hangar on the Wharf, and come and be inspired by Roger Crawford. We're super fortunate to have him with us in this Pillar series.
Roger, Mandy, thank you very much for being
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Here's a really cool story. So, birds have been living in proximity with humans for millions of years, but it's only in the last 5,000 years or so that it's been in cities or towns or built-up areas.
What we have done is we've created a new place where birds are under intense natural selection from our activities.
John Marsloff is professor of wildlife science at the University of Washington in Seattle. He says evolutionary changes can happen in birds even after just a few decades of living with us.
Pamela Yeh studied this in San Diego, and what Pamela found was that the amount of white in the tail of juncos has decreased as they've colonized suburban areas. And this is a genetic and a naturally selected response. The reason it seems to occur, the hypothesis, is that in the wildlands, juncos typically just get to breed once because it's a harsh climate in the mountains. And so there's selection by females for males that can be aggressive and defend a space for their female to breed in. But in the suburban areas, that's not the case. The breeding season is really long. Females might get off three or four broods of young.
So their evolution's in overdrive.
And they favored males that are less aggressive and more attentive to their young. And the corollary of being an aggressive junco is how much white you have in your tail.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by Tristan Knudsen-Lombardo. He's the ED of ORCA. Welcome, Tristan.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today. So can you start? We're going to be talking about ORCA spring and summer activities. Give us a little sale slash ORCA 101, if you will.
Yeah. The ORCA program, we're a program of SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. We're a region-wide nonprofit. We work with people with disabilities and seniors and elders all throughout Southeast Alaska. We have offices in Juneau, Ketchikan, Haines, and Skagway. Last year we served about 1,200 people out of those four offices in the area. So chances are if you didn't receive services from SAIL, you probably know somebody who did, and we have a wide range of services, and one of the probably more noticeable or popular programs is the ORCA program, the recreation program, and we work with kids as young as elementary school through adults of all ages, and our goal is to get people outside and recreating regardless of the time of year, the weather, their disability. Our goal is to make it happen. So a lot of people see us up at the mountain in the winter, but we also have a whole host of summer programs that we put on.
All right. And would you say, what are a couple of your highlight programs?
So a lot of people recognize us, our ski and snowboard program up Eagle Crest. The last four or five summers, have been putting on inclusive summer camps for youth with other agencies in Juneau. So we do an art and recreation camp with the Canvas. We've done stuff with Discovery Southeast. We'll do another one with Zachor and Youth Center this summer. So the goal is that we have kids with disabilities and kids without disabilities commingling and doing stuff together.
Okay. And let's see, you have some spring activities coming up soon. Tell us about them.
Yeah, we have a couple of big events coming up in May and June. Our first one is May 9th. It's a Saturday. It's our continuation of our Learn to Adapt series. So we are going to have all of our adaptive bicycles and hand cycles and kayak equipment out at Twin Lakes on May 9th, and our hope is that folks with physical disabilities will come out if they haven't had a chance to kayak or cycle or they don't know how they would go about it. We'll have everything on display, and all of our staff will be there to help folks figure out how to do it. So whether you've had your disability for a while or you're recently disabled or a new injury, we really want to encourage folks to come out, try it out. There's no cost, just kind of see what we have available. So that's May 9th at Twin Lakes. And then at the end of May, May 31st, we have our annual whale watch and cruise, and that's pretty popular. A lot of folks like to get out on the water. Allen Marine has been a great supporter of SAIL over the years and have donated the cruise to us. And so that'll be in the afternoon, I think noon to 3, and tickets will go on sale at the beginning of May, and people can find on our website, or there'll be stuff up around town, posters and that kind of stuff. We have a limited number of tickets to sell, and it usually does sell out, so we encourage folks to buy tickets early. June 6th, we have our spring picnic, and we welcome the whole community to come out to Sandy Beach. Consumers of services, family members, partner agencies, you guys here, anybody's welcome to come and have a burger or hot dog on us. And there's usually music, and we've got bikes out and lots of fun activities. So hopefully I'm sure it'll be great weather on June 6th. So those are kind of our big three spring events kind of coming up. Throughout the summer, you know, we're really busy with our youth programming, our summer camps I mentioned. We also do a lot of multi-day trips with folks. We're going to do a kayak trip to Seymour Canal and Pat Creek for bear viewing. So it'll be about a 6-7 day kayak trip. So if anybody wants to get out and watch some bears, go see a really unique part of Southeast Alaska, they're more than welcome to join us on that. We're going to go take a group to the Haines Fair. A lot of folks like to go up there for the weekend. And we're going to take another group to go hiking and biking up in Kluane National Park up in the Yukon. And that'll be later in the summer, too. But Yeah, we have a whole smorgasbord of things planned for the summer. And according to the paper yesterday, we're going to have a warmer summer than usual. So it's a good opportunity to get out.
So you mentioned, like, for the trip to Pat Creek or some of these other great trips, that if somebody wants to get involved, please come with us.
Yeah.
How can somebody participate?
We like to meet folks. Anyone that wants to join our program or participate in something, we love to meet them first, just so we know, you know, what their disability is or what kind of accommodations they might need. Where they are as far as their experience with kayaking. We do offer some kayaking classes beforehand, so if you've never been in a kayak or it's been a while, it's a really good time to get in a kayak and just learn basic safety and paddling strokes. So people can either call us. So the easiest way to get a hold of us is call us, 586-0104. You can also find us. We're right down the hill from the hospital, the corner of Hospital Drive and Glacier Highway. A lot of folks remember it's where the Juno Birth Center used to be. Now United Way and Red Cross is in the same building as us. You can also visit us at our website at sailinc.org, sailinc.org. Or you can come to an event and meet the staff and go from there.
Sure, sure. And are you in need of volunteers as well?
Yeah, actually, we always are in need of volunteers. And actually, that's a great reminder. We are going to have our summer volunteer training. It's the first weekend in May, and it'll be kayak and bicycle training. So we'll get out all of our adaptive bikes and go over kind of how to fit somebody in a kayak, basic kayak safety, things like that. So we have a really great core group of volunteers, and some of the benefits are you get to, you know, come on a really cool trip that we do. We did a ski trip to Whitehorse this winter because we had not as much snow as we were hoping to have, and so we got to invite a couple volunteers that had been really stellar volunteers to come with us, and so it's kind of it's a nice perk. You get to get out and do something fun. So we always welcome volunteers.
All right, Tristan. Sounds like a lot of interesting stuff coming up. Again, the website, if people want to learn more about it.
Yeah, sailinc.org, S-A-I-L-I-N-C.
Okay. Tristan Knutson-Lombardo, the ED of ORCA. Are we missing anything?
Come and find us this summer.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tristan.
Thanks, Scott.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 21st of April, 2015. In 1909, Mark Twain is reported to have said, "I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It is coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it." And he was true to his word. Mark Twain died on this day in 1910, a day after the comet's closest approach to Earth. It's the birthday of the naturalist John Muir, born in Dunbar, Scotland, 1838, grew up on a farm in Wisconsin. His father, strict Christian, the boy by the age of 11 could recite most of the Old Testament and all of the New. He was very smart with mechanics and inventions. He invented complex door locks, an automatic horse-feeding machine, a fire lighter, an elaborate clock that told the day of the week and was connected to a bed that would put the boy up on his feet at the appointed hour. Went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he got interested in plants, in the woods and the meadows. But still, he worked on his inventions. He made a desk that was connected to a clock that would kick into gear as soon as young John woke up, and it took each book that he needed to study and pushed it to the top of the desk and opened it to the correct page. A whole number of complex scientific instruments. But his life changed when he had an accident in a wagon wheel factory. He was working there as a sawyer. A file slipped, hit him in the eye. He was temporarily blinded, spent 6 weeks in a dark room, not knowing if he'd ever see again. When he did get his sight back, he realized how important the beautiful world was to him, and he said, "I bade adieu to all my mechanical inventions, determined to devote the rest of my life to the study of the inventions of God." He set out on a walk, 1,000 miles from Indiana to the Gulf of Mexico, then walked from San Francisco up into the Sierra Nevada, and that became the great cause of his life, protecting wilderness areas, particularly the Yosemite Valley. And to accomplish that, he founded the Sierra Club. And it's the birthday of Charlotte Bronte, born in Yorkshire, England, 1816, the third of six children, famous for her novel Jane Eyre, published in 1847, story of a plain and penniless orphan governess who falls in love with her troubled employer, who is also married. Within a year of the publication of Jane Eyre, Charlotte's three remaining siblings died, Anne and Emily of tuberculosis, and her brother Branwell of alcoholism. Charlotte eventually married, became pregnant, died of complications of pregnancy in 1855. Here's a poem for today by Stuart Kestenbaum, entitled April Prayer. Just before the green begins, there is a hint of green, a blush of color, and the red buds thicken the ends of the maple's branches, and everything is poised before the start of a new world, which is really the same world, just moving forward from bud to flower to blossom to fruit to harvest to sweet sleep. And the roots await the next signal, every call, a miracle. And the switchboard is lighting up, and the operators are standing by in the pledge drive we've all been listening to. Go make the call. April Prayer by Stuart Kestenbaum, from Prayers and Run-On Sentences, published by Deerbrook Editions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Join friends and neighbors for the annual Empty Bowls Benefit at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Empty Bowls, a fundraiser for the Glory Hole, features delicious all-you-can-eat soups from your favorite local restaurants, fresh-baked cookies, live music, a silent auction, the always-fun dessert auction, and beautiful bowls from local artisans. Tickets are available at both Hearthside Books locations and at the door. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole.
And you're listening to the voice of Andrea Campbell. It's a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. And Andrea is here in the studio with me now. She is the Regional Development Director for Coast Alaska here in the K2 building. But she's wearing a different hat today. You run a planning organization called Eventful, is that right?
I do, Scott. It's called Eventful, a coordinating company, and I do event coordinating.
Okay. And among the events that you're coordinating are the Glory Hole fundraiser at Centennial Hall. Is it the 26th?
It is the 26th. It'll be this Sunday, Centennial Hall, at 5 p.m. until 7 p.m.
And this is, I think, the Glory Hole, one of their premier flagship fundraising events. Is that right?
Correct. This is one of their only big fundraisers that they do per year, and it makes up about 10% of their operating budget.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Can you sort of paint the picture for our listeners of what one of these looks like?
It is so much fun. There's so much that goes on there. You come in, you get to pick a handcrafted bowl made by a local artist. You go through the soup line, and you get to choose from all these different soups from all of these wonderful restaurants around town. There's a silent auction that goes on. We have Aurora Strings coming in and playing music. And it's just a great time to come in and visit and mingle with everyone and participate. It's awesome.
And eat delicious soup.
And eat delicious soup.
And take a handmade bowl home.
Yeah, absolutely. The bowls are wonderful. I have a bowl from last year that I got, and it looks like something I would find in a gallery downtown.
Mm.
They're amazing.
So first come, the earlier you get there, the more selection you have.
Yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. So you really want to get your tickets early, so you're not last in line trying to buy your ticket at the door.
I think just about everyone in town knows what the Glory Hole does. And I know you're an event coordinator, but as far as you know, can you give us an update on what the Glory Hole does for the community?
Yeah, actually, they do so much. Last year, provided 56,000 meals and over 10,000 safe beds to people in Juneau. They provide food boxes, housing and job search assistance, transportation assistance, and many other services.
Okay. And so, again, 10% of their operating budget is helped by this Empty Bowls event. It's on Sunday, April 26th at 5 p.m. How does the evening look? How long does it go?
It's only 2 hours, 5 to 7. You come in, you visit, you have some soup, maybe you bid on a silent auction item, listen to some music, and it's a great way to spend a Sunday evening. It doesn't go too late.
Okay. Is there a line usually at 5?
Yes, there is a line, especially if you haven't bought your ticket yet. So if you want to buy a ticket, they're available at both Hearthside locations, and we really encourage you to get them ahead of time so you're not waiting in that need-to-purchase line.
Okay, Andrea, well, what are we missing? What else should we add?
You know, we've got quite a few sponsors that are sponsoring this event: Alaska Airlines, White Pass and Yukon Railroad, Sea Alaska, North Pacific Erectors, ConocoPhillips, Breezen, and many others. We are still looking for sponsors for this event, so if you're interested in being a sponsor, you can either call the Glory Hole at 586-4159 and ask for Maria, or you can email me at eventfulcoordinatingco. So eventfulcoordinatingco at gmail.com. Longest email address ever. I apologize.
I wonder if you can get like a bit.ly email address.
Yeah, I need something a little shorter there, but it kind of encompasses the name. So
sure, sure. All right, we get it all, Andrea?
I think so. Thank you so much, Scott, for having me on today.
Thank you.
All right.
Fred was a gentleman, he'd never harm a soul. He still couldn't make me laugh in my world that had grown cold. I often think of him, he was my only friend. I never dreamed this was the way that it would finally end. We met at the mission shelter and wondered if things would ever change. At night we slept under the interstate bridge in shelter from the rain. It was 3 feet tall and you had to kneel on down to crawl back in. But you wouldn't wake up with a knife in your back from someone else's sins. In the day we'd walk the streets begging for spare change. We worked the ATM machine on the corner of 5th and Main. These kids in fast cars would drive by and call us names. I'd just turn around, flip them off, Fred would do the same. For all of sinned and fallen down, short of God's great glory, I heard the mission preachers scream it, amen and holy, holy. The heart is full of wickedness and drowns in its deceit. And you've got to watch each step you take when you're out here on the street. Late one night we were heading back to the bridge to get some sleep. We were almost there when this car full of kids came racing down the street. They jumped out of their cars with their baseball bats and pellet guns. I dropped my sleeping bag and yelled at Fred, we'd better run. I scrambled up the incline,
knelt on down and crawled back in. But Fred had tripped and fallen down, this would be his very end. I heard his screams among their laughter as they broke both of his legs. What seemed like time and eternity, Fred lay on the ground dead. The cops threw Fred in the ambulance like he was just a piece of meat. I heard one laugh and tell another, that's one less bum here on the street. The preacher at the mission was unfazed by the news. And at the evening service he never mentioned Fred. My God, what can you do? The city paid and buried Fred deep in a pauper's grave. Those kids were never caught, they slipped the noose and got away. But me, I bought this gun and now I know what I must do. Cause it don't matter anymore when your life is almost through. For all have sinned and fallen down short of God's great glory. I heard the mission preacher scream it, amen and holy, holy. Heart is full of wickedness and drowns in its deceit. And you've got to watch each step you take when you're out here on the street.
The Alaska State Improv Festival is back with four nights of fun from April 23rd until April 26th. See Improv Boston All-Stars, Portland Duo, Joyride, and many others at Alaska's largest celebration of unscripted comedy. Shows begin at 6 p.m. in McTheaters Hall. Visit asifest.com for showtimes, listings, and tickets. Thursday to Sunday, April 23rd until the 26th, the Alaska State Improv Festival, asifest.com.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. It's about 8 minutes until the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined in the studio now by Brenda Taylor and Beth Weldon. They're both part of the Juno Douglas High School Site Council. Welcome you two.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Yeah, nice to have you on the show. Why don't we start off, tell us a little bit about how the Site Council came to be.
So site councils came to be through the school board about more than 20 years ago when they were trying to get the stakeholders of a school more involved in the decision-making in a particular school. And so they're all site councils, which happen at all of the public schools in our district, have parent representatives, they have teacher representative, other staff representatives, the principal, a school board liaison, and community members. And that's why we're here, is for community members. And specifically, we'd also like to talk a little bit about the Juno Douglas High School, which also site council, which also has student members, which is a real great thing about it.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. Brenda, how did you get involved?
I got involved with site councils actually way back when my daughter was in kindergarten at Auk Bay, because I wanted to have a way to know more what was happening in my daughter's school and to have a little bit of an impact and say on what happened.
How about you, Beth?
Well, I got involved in the JDHS site council because someone recommended it to me, and I'm going to have two boys in the high school next year, so I figured I'd better start paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, it sounds good to be involved in the decision-making that's going to affect
your
children's education. Among other things, you are looking to build the JDHS site council.
Right. Our terms are about due, and so we have a couple community members that terms have expired, and so we're looking for different community members that want to come in. One of the pluses of our site council is we're very diverse, and so we want to keep that diversity in doing so. A lot of that is a community member, so we're looking for any community members, they don't have to have a kid in school, that want to look at being part of the site council and making some decisions, and it's a good group to be around.
And Brenda, you said there are actually students on the site council.
This year, I think we're really fortunate because they're elected through the student council elections, but there is one representative elected from each year. And so we have four very active, vocal students, and I think that's been one of the – you never know what the site council is going to be in a particular year, but I've never been on one that's been as fortunate to have such clear voices from the students. And so the back and forth between our site council and the student council has been really promising and helpful.
All right. What would be a good way if somebody wanted to learn more about it to become involved? Should they maybe come to a meeting? What would be a good process for them?
Well, they can either come to a meeting or they can look at the JDHS website and look at that, or they can contact the school, the principal's office, and ask for applications like that. But the simplest way is to come to meetings.
Okay. And Brenda, what are a few things on your radar right now at JDHS?
So we will be one of the things actually is more collaboration with TMHS. And so that was started a little bit from the school board. And oftentimes things come from the school board, and the school board says to the various site councils, hey, we'd like input from the schools. And so site councils are a really great conduit for that. And sometimes the site councils say, hey, school board, we'd like you to think about this. So the site councils of the two high schools were asked to meet together in terms of budget issues. And we really liked that beginning. And so we said, let's do this for non-budget issues. And so we've been really, we had one joint meeting, and we're planning to have two every year from now on. To talk about how do we want to collaborate, and also what do we want to do to maintain our individuality, which is a special thing. We will be getting the accreditation reports back, the formal ones from the program that does the accreditation, so that will come to the site council, and the principal will, and the staff at the high school will say, here's how we're going to implement these plan, these ideas, so that will come back to the site council sort of for our understanding and maybe the stamp of approval as well. We're talking about improving the school climate, and one of those pieces is these parent forums, one of which there is tonight.
Tomorrow night. At 5:30. And it's about distracted driving, your teen driving behind the wheel, which is scary to us all. So, and Officer Blaine Hatch is going to be the commentator, and I think it's running from 5:30 to 7 at the JDHS library, and anybody's invited, and hopefully we'll get a lot of information out there and try to put some fears at rest for some of the folks out there watching teen drivers.
The school board's been looking at next generation and what the next generation plan is going to look at, so we've been pretty involved in that and saying, so how has next generation worked for JD? What would we want to change? What would we want to maintain? Those kinds of things are what we talk about. The math curriculum, we get a report on that and give our feedback, or the social studies curriculum review. Those kinds of things come in and out of the
We invite a teacher every time to come in, and the latest two have been about the math curriculum and now the social study curriculum and what to do with regular classes, honors classes, and AP classes. So it's all a lot of information. So not only are you part of the decision-making, you also get a lot of information as a parent or a community member. So that's a real strong push for
Council. I found your website. I just Googled JDHS Site Council, and it came up right away. Is that a good place for info?
That I think you'll see our meeting dates are there, and our past minutes should be there. Sometimes we're not as prompt as we should be. The bylaws are there, which explain the structure, which is that we have three community members who rotate, well, who have two-year terms each, as well as parent representative things. Yes, and as well as you'll find at that spot the nomination letter. So if you are interested in being on our site council, you would fill out that information, which basically just says what's your name and your contact information and why would you like to be on our site council. And then you would submit that to the office, and then we'll make copies of that. And in our May meeting, which is the first Monday in May, we'll be voting.
Okay.
And you're welcome to come and vote for yourself.
And the application is not a scary process. I just filled one last year, and they ask you why, and they're literally just looking for why. They're not an essay, and grammar's not corrected, so I just put two sentences, and it was fine. So the application shouldn't be a scary thing.
All right, well, we got about 30 seconds left here on a Juno afternoon. I want to thank both of you for coming in today, Brenda Taylor and Beth Weldon, and sharing with us the JDHS Site Council. What's that website once more?
I don't know the letters.
Okay, yeah, who knows those anymore, right? Yeah. Google JDHS Site
Council.
It's a beautiful afternoon outside. The weather for tonight looks partly cloudy, isolated rain showers in the evening.